I've been to Moscow's airport.
So Moscow, you go into this airport, which was, I think, new at the time. And the place is dark. I mean, literally dark. And there's gypsy kids running around all over the place, pickpocketing people in the terminal.
What year was this, John? What year were you there?
About 1 year before before the fall of communism, which was some...
Oh, me too. Like 88, 89?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that's when I was there. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have been able to see it because it's so dark in the airport, in the terminal. But anyway.
I'll be wearing the red rose.
There was the funny scenes, but besides the kids running around, there was also one in the entire airport. There was one automatic door that opened and closed to let people in and out.
Yeah.
And it was surrounded by kids who kept jumping up and down on the thing to open and close the door.
Yeah, exactly.
You could
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, you're right. It wasn't like an Argus based or like electronic eye. It was a mat. It was a mat, right, pressure mat that would open it up.
Right. Like, so old these school. Kids are jumping. So you can't get out that door. And meanwhile, I talked to somebody about this, why the place is so dark, by the way. And some guy told me that, well, the deal is that it was designed by a German company and they specced out all these lights. There's all these little bulbs that were inset in kind of cans. The whole ceiling was covered with them. But there was no light coming out of them. He said the Germans specced this thing out to a certain wattage bulb, not to a certain lumen. And when they used Russian bulbs, they got about half the lumens out of them. So the place was pitch black.
I was there with the Moscow Music Peace Festival. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, that was... do you want to hear the story? Are you interested?
Yeah, no, sure.
Okay, so Doc McGee, I don't know if that name means anything to you. He was...
Yeah, it rings a bell.
Yeah, very famous manager of bands. And in the 80s, he was the manager of Bon Jovi, Motley Crue. Well, those are the two big ones. And he had been caught... I don't know if he was, I think that either he had rented the Learjet or was registered to his name. There was a Learjet that landed in Miami with like 5,000 kilos of coke. And so he got busted for it. And the judge gave him kind of a get out of jail free card. And he had to do some great community service. So the idea was he would do an anti-drug, anti-alcohol concert in Russia. And of course, this went up to some pretty high levels because this was a political thing as well. So he's clearly well-connected in all the right places. So off we went. And this, I think it was 88, in a rented DC-8, some crappy plane. So Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, but with the other Black Sabbath guys, Geezer Butler, and was it Tommy Iommi? And... oh man, it was Skid Row. We stopped in Germany, picked up the Scorpions, and then we landed in Moscow. And it was for this huge concert that would be held in Lenin Stadium. So they, we were in the hotel right near Red Square, where they actually turned on the hot water in that part of the city as a gesture to their guests. And I could probably fill up three No Agendas worth of stories about that trip there, but I'll just give you one that was pretty cool. Because, of course, this was the... I'll give you two stories. This was the anti-drug, anti-alcohol concert. So on the plane, on the way over, and this is when Sharon Osbourne was still just a little rotund, kind of pale, no personality, having English girl who was managing Ozzy Osbourne. So she was on board, and Ozzy was completely plastered. Everyone was plastered, but Ozzy was really, really out of it. And he's standing near the lavatory, because we were all kind of sitting together, and he's like, Sharon, I gotta go, someone in the loo, Sharon, because someone was occupied. And Sharon's like, oh, Ozzy, just wait. So he wets himself right there, right in the aisle. This is just like a second grader, a huge white spot, or a huge wet spot in his pants, which really kind of set the tone for the rest of the entire trip. But then,
who would pick that guy to go on an anti-alcohol tour?
That's my point. Oh, like the Motley Crue guys were cool, or yeah, Skid Row. Yeah. Come on.
Or any of them.
Exactly. So we were there for like four nights or five nights. So on the second night, which of course consisted of lots of vodka and just brazen drunkenness. It was crazy. The Moscow chapter of the Hell's Angels showed up in front of our hotel. Didn't know they had one. And remember, this was still before the wall came down. And they were on Java motorcycles, you know, these Yugoslavian-built bikes. And they were out of their mind, John. They were like popping wheelies, flipping off the back. It was just, it was like being in a fucking movie. And I'll just never forget. It's like, you have this idea of what a communist state, particularly what, you know, Moscow would be like, and you're there, and it's just, there was no control. It was mayhem. I looked at their technology. Their technology was like old gray Volkswagen buses with curtains. You know, this was supposed to be the highly technical KGB that could, you know, eavesdrop on everything and had superiority over the world. No way.
Well, I'm reminded of, you know, Ronald Reagan when he became president. He was shaking his fist at Russia and he called him the evil empire. And he went on and on and on. He did this for like a while.
Mr. Gorbachev, bring that wall down.
But then he went to Russia and he went to Russia, and it's almost like he went to Russia and had an epiphany, and he never, ever again said anything about the evil empire.
Because he saw it, it's not there, right?
Yeah, he saw it was a big bunch of bull. I mean, I noticed it. But I was staying in the Mir Hotel, which is across from that Russian, that white building that got, you know, shelled or whatever. And got some nice photos. And they had mics in the room that were obviously, because the Mir used to be, I guess it was the diplomat's hotel for a number of years, and then it became a public hotel.
Were they like big Sennheisers instead of micro stuff? It was like...
They were big clunky mics, but they had been painted over so many times because the room kept getting repainted, and they were all just a gob of paint. And
bump there?
It's a big bump, a gob of paint. And in every floor, there was a woman that was the floor woman that you had to check in with. They never really did any security, but you were told before you went, if you did your due diligence, you had to give them gifts constantly.
Oh, yes, the floor lady, if you wanted toilet paper or if you wanted to make a phone call.
Yeah, and you had to drop off toys. Yep. So apparently at the time, the most valuable thing you could give to you besides cigarettes were I was told this, and they got a kick out of it, because most of them had kids, and they were these little Tonka toys or these little mini things, those little Hot Wheels, those little things. Those were like gold in Russia at the time.
Yep.
And so you'd gift them with...
Did you go to the hooker boat? Did you see that when you were there?